New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Are we born with empathy, or is it a skill that can be taught? Choosing empathy can transform some of our most difficult interactions. Also, studies have shown that an act of empathy can have a positive effect on our immune response. Our guest today, Dr. Judith Orloff, suggests that empathy is a bedrock of healing in difficult situations and needs to be a daily priority to become a habit, not just a fleeting desire. She also has cautions and advice for us, including, can we have too much empathy? Today, we'll be exploring the many aspects of empathy with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith Orloff is a member of the UCLA psychiatric clinical staff and specializes in treating empaths and sensitive people in her private practice. She also offers empathy training programs to businesses and organizations and teaches empathic tools to doctors, corporate teams, leaders, managers, customer service trainers, as well as individuals. She's been called the godmother of the empath movement and has written several books on such subjects as intuition, life strategies for sensitive people, and empathy. Her most recent book is The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. So please join us for the next hour as we explore the superpower of empathy with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. I'm speaking with Judith in her home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Judith, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Justine.
Oh, it's so great to have you here once more. And first of all, I would love for you to highlight just what is empathy?
Empathy is the ability for my heart to reach out to your heart to know what you're feeling. And so that my heart can open to you, whether you're going through a challenge or whether you're going through a happy time, my heart can feel your heart. It's a form of deep spiritual connection that we have with each other.
It's so beautiful. And I want to ask, are we born, as I mentioned in the intro, are we born with empathy or is it a skill that can be taught?
Well, I think it's both. And I base the book on the premise that this is a skill that can be taught. And that even if you haven't had a lot of experience with consciously opening empathy up, you can begin now. And if you have had the experience, you could deepen your empathy and look out for obstacles, because we can be born with empathy. Some people are born with empathy deficient disorder, such as narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths, versus the higher end of the empathy spectrum, which can be the highly sensitive people and the empaths who don't have the kind of filters that everyday people have. And so they tend to absorb the emotions of others into their own bodies. And that can be developed, or some babies are born so empathic. They look like little Buddhas. They come out and their hands going up and they're feeling the world, you know, and others come out like corporate executives or, you know, go and conquer everything. So you see the temperament in the beginning. And certainly when I was delivering babies, I saw that. It's a beautiful thing to see the differences, but it's either you can be born with it or it can develop as a result of practice and maturation.
So do you suggest that we have then empathy styles?
Yes. Yes. I go through a few empathy styles that are important. And these are the empathy styles that we most naturally gravitate to. For instance, emotional empathy. Do you connect to other people via your emotions? Or do you have cognitive empathy, which is connecting more with your mind through somebody else, but not necessarily feeling it in your heart as much? And then there's intuitive empathy, where you intuitively connect with another person and feel empathy through that means. And then you have healing empathy, where you're a mystic and a healer and a spirit. You connect through spirituality, where you can sense someone else through their connection to something larger.
Judith, one is not necessarily better than another. So let's say if you're cognitive empathic, that's okay. I mean, if you're not doing a healer empath, you know, it's okay, isn't it?
It's all okay. And whatever you are naturally, you want to support it and nurture it. And I also suggest trying out the other types so you can also develop beyond your natural type. And that's important because I, as a physician and as an empath, I love cognitive empathy. You know, I love connecting with the mind. And I also love connecting with the heart and my intuition and my spirituality. So you can have the whole deal if you want it. But I want to say empathy is a, it's about attraction. You have to want it. This isn't something you force yourself to do. If this is not your path, go another path if that's better for you. But so many people contact me who want to learn how to do this without absorbing the stress of the world or other people, that I wanted to offer a book to show people the strategies on how to do that. Because as an empath, I've had to learn. Otherwise, I would have been exhausted and I wouldn't have had the longevity of my career that I've had, which I, you know, is a great gift to me.
Well, I know that you really work with highly sensitive people. And so that is a problem for those who are so sensitive, is to just take it all on. And I want to also ask you a motivation, a personal motivation for developing empathy. If we need help to motivate us in this whole field, to know it's actually good for our immune system. And it also might reduce our level of fear and worry. Can you say something about that, please?
Oh, yes. I go into the neurobiologic aspects of empathy, and there's something fascinating called the Mother Teresa effect, where they have measured the saliva of people who are witnessing a beautifully empathic act. And they notice, scientists notice, that the antibodies go up as you're watching the act. So even watching an empathic act can be incredibly healing to your body, as empathy is that powerful. It encourages us to be our best selves and to come from our hearts and to be able to feel the healing that comes from empathy. I think that's one aspect that people have left out a lot in the readings that I've done, where empathy is a healing force that you connect with to heal yourself, heal your relationships, and heal the world. It has that capacity, and it starts with the heart.
You talk about it as being contagious and generative.
It's regenerative. It definitely is. The more empathy you can have for yourself, as I talk a lot about self-empathy, the more healing you could experience in your own body. If you're going through an illness, let's say, you want to have empathy for the whole process. You don't want to be beating yourself up and hating the illness. You want to be showering yourself with empathy to promote the healing. And the same is true with any kind of emotional challenge. You want to show yourself some grace and some empathy as you're going through it. Life can be very difficult at times. And you want empathy to be your friend throughout all that. That's why I suggested as a daily practice to develop it every single day with the smaller things so you can feel the healing effects of it in your body.
You mentioned like self-care and self-empathy to be on your own side, so to speak. And some of the words that you've used in your writing is observe, don't absorb.
Absolutely. There's a discipline of loving detachment where you take a step back. You're not jumping into somebody else's skin, which empaths often do. They jump into other people's skin and they feel every bit of what they're feeling, which is not healthy. You want to take a step back and you can still have just as powerful empathy where you can observe what's going on and hold space for somebody that you care about, but you don't take it on in your body. And this takes a little practice where you can observe it. You're not in denial, but you don't absorb it. You keep it a little bit at a distance. And people who are developing empathy need to learn to take a step back sometimes. They're a little too close, but one step back can give you that breathing room where you're not going to be absorbing the depression or the physical pain or the anxiety, but you're observing it, the witness state of observing what's going on, the suffering in other people, or the happiness of other people. You know, I'm not, you know, just talking about suffering. I'm talking about joy. You can take that on. That's fine. But not the suffering. That's, you know, that's a bigger topic. And it's a matter of respecting somebody's path and the dignity of their own path. You can support somebody empathically as they're going through something, but you can't fix them.
I'm thinking when you talk about joy and feeling someone's joy, many of us will go through, oh, jealous of their joy. Oh, if they're joyful, then I can't be joyful, or they're taking away my joy. You know what I'm saying there?
Well, empathy is my happiness is your happiness. There's no greater happiness in the world, you know, the Buddhist precept, but you grow into it. And it's not something maybe you develop overnight, but it's an energetic truth that if you're able to feel the vibrations, the energy of other people and feel their happiness, it's mutually beneficial in healing.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. You're talking about, there's several subjects about witnessing that I'd love to go into. And also, you mentioned those with deficit disorder, empathy deficit disorder. That's a provocative statement. So we'll go more into that in just one moment. But I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff, and she's the author of The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, drjudithorloff.com. And she abbreviates doctor. It's Dr. Judith Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F, drjudithorloff.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff, and we're talking about The Genius of Empathy, which is the title of her book. And I really want to go further into being a witness. There are several types of witnessing. There's passive witnessing and active witnessing that you talk about in your work. So help us understand the difference and what is appropriate at what time.
Yes, where there's a skill to empathic listening, and it's something that we consciously do. And you have to be very aware of the steps of it as you're going through it so you can hold space for somebody without bearing the brunt of their suffering. No matter how much you love them, no matter how much you're connected to them, it won't help them if you take on their suffering. And I know that people, you know, feel that to be compassionate, you need to take on other people's suffering. And what I'm saying is that that's more of being a martyr. And it's not a really healthy way to be if you want to have empathy and have it be very healthy. So you need to witness what's going on by keeping a little bit of distance and listening and sending out heart energy as you're listening. You don't just listen with your mind. You're able to focus on the heart, which is in the middle of your chest, and send out that loving energy, which is soothing and encouraging to whoever is suffering. Or if you're praying, let's say, for someone at a distance, it will travel great lengths to find the source that you're aiming that love towards. Or if you want to pray for, let's say, a war-torn country, your heart will know where to go. It'll go to exactly the right place if you say the intention. And so I want you to begin to have a lot of faith in this. Now, this is something that I've seen in my life as being consistent and healing. And the mind might try and talk you out of some of the things I'm talking about, but it's so powerful to empathically listen to someone versus just your head, versus getting too involved with someone or saying, oh my God, that happened to me too, even worse. And so then you change the focus away from the suffering person to you, which is not the right thing to do.
So I just want to emphasize what you're saying right there, that if someone, you're feeling what they're going through, and you want to jump in and say, oh yeah, well, I did, but you know, we tend to want to then tell our own story. So you are cautioning us here that to do something different.
Yes, that's not what this is about. This is about the other person. That's not about you sharing your experiences. That's something else that might be appropriate in another setting if you both want to share your experiences. But if you want to empathically listen to someone, it's not about you sharing your experiences. It's about creating the most healing, empathic space for the suffering person that you possibly can so it could jumpstart their healing.
Does that mean that you cannot ask them questions, like guiding questions? Or
yeah, that's a great question. If you're just listening, you can say, I know what you mean, you know, or wow. But if you're just listening, I wouldn't ask too many guiding questions. If you're processing it, that's a different stage.
Yeah.
Then you can talk about, you know, brainstorming and did you ever consider this, or, you know, all that. That's not what listening is. Listening is a lost art, Justine. I feel very strongly about the high art of empathic listening. Listening means basically being quiet. And when you're quiet, it's not like you're doing nothing. You're sending out heart energy. You're holding space in a loving way for this precious being in front of you. That is more than enough if you are empathically listening. It's what I do as a psychiatrist a lot. It's not always how I operate, but it's sometimes I do. And it's a very powerful thing for people to be listened to. Most people are not listened to. They're cut off. They're spoken over. Very rarely does someone just say, hey, just tell me about it, you know, but not to go on and offer too much information and go on to a million subjects. Part of empathic listening is limiting the number of subjects you deal with to one.
That's a little bit tricky. So if you are listening and then the person is so excited that there's somebody there listening, then they're going to tell their whole life story. But so what's your advice to help them talk about the one subject that's really on their heart in that moment?
Right. I would do it beforehand. I would have a short conversation saying, I'd really love to just focus on what's, you know, most disturbing you now, so we can, you know, create a healing environment to help heal it. And it will get us off track if we go into 10 other things. So this is about one, focus on one thing. If you want to focus on other things, that could be done in other contexts. But just for us, let's, you know, we have that agreement in the beginning, which doesn't always work, because I know from giving, it works a lot, though. It has a tendency, but people are so passionate once they get in touch with what they're talking about. They want to go on to everything in their lives. And so at that point, what I do is I say, you know, I appreciate all this. Let's just stick to the one topic at hand this time.
I'm willing to be here for you for this.
Right.
You know, I guess for this topic. And I'm just thinking and witnessing, you had a great mentor, and that was your mother.
That's right. My mother was a huge mentor for me. She was a physician. And when I was a little girl, she used to take me on house calls with her. And she would drive in her Cadillac up to the, you know, the hills and see her patients. And I was so shy and quiet, I would just sit there and watch her. And she would take her stethoscope and listen with the stethoscope to the heart for the longest time, you know, just to hear every nuance of the heartbeat and listen to what the patient was saying. She would listen, and she had a black bag, which is a very powerful object, you know, and she had her body language moving forward, and she had her caring heart. And I watched all this. Now, this is the old family practice physician. You know, this is how they used to be, for those of you who don't remember.
I know. They didn't have their computers in front of them.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. And so I watched her, and I imprinted on that. As the modeling empathy is one of the most powerful things you can do for children, for other people. You have to be the change. So you can talk about it to the end of the world, and it won't have the same effect. But if they see you in action, if they see you simply being nice to somebody, you know, and I mean they, I mean anyone, it lifts up your heart. It does something very positive. And we need that positivity to combat all the negative energy in the world, and where people have so gone off track, meaning off the empathy track. I just believe in empathy so much. When I doubt everything, I believe in empathy. I know the goodness that's there, and I know the power it has to heal. And so you have to be really clear about your values. And so I invite you to clarify your values, what is truly important to you, no matter what's happening on the outside. Do you believe in empathy? Do you believe in love? Do you believe in connecting to nature? What do you truly believe in? You need to know that, because your life is going to go up and down, and you need to have these values intact. It will be a buoy for you in more turbulent times.
Right. I'm thinking it's like a grounding. It's like a foundation, right, that you can firmly stand on when the winds of change and chaos are blowing.
And I don't care how many people aren't having empathy, or there's so many good reasons not to have empathy, but none of that matters to me, because we must have empathy for our survival personally, and our happiness, and our intimacy, and our connection to others, and also for the earth and the world.
We can remember when we are the recipient of empathy.
Yeah.
We can remember how it, you mentioned, it raised our spirits and made us feel cared for and valued and understood. So if we remember how it was for us as a recipient to then have the privilege of giving that to others. And I think that I read somewhere in your work that the giving of empathy, it actually makes the brain more active than even receiving it.
No, that's right. Is that it feeds us, it feeds our brains much more than receiving it. So the giving of it is self-regenerative. And, you know, I just want to say back to what we were talking about. I was, you know, recently in the emergency room with a loved one who was experiencing incredible pain, and the place didn't have any pillows. I looked everywhere, no pillows. And so I kind of befriended this. It was, I think she was a cleaning person. She might have been an angel. And I said, "We don't have any pillows. We need a pillow." And she goes, "Don't worry, honey. I'll bring you a pillow." And she went to some secret closet somewhere and brought the pillow. And to me, at that moment, that meant the world to me. Now, that's what I'm going after. I don't want to have abstractions. That's the reality of empathy, where an angel can come to you and say, "Here's the pillow," and it's exactly what you need at the moment, and it made a big difference.
Oh, boy. Everyone can get the feeling of that. And I noticed that as we're talking, Judith, so often you put your hands on your heart. Over and over and over again. And I know that there is a beautiful heart, breathing heart practice that you talk about and help us with. So describe that practice.
I'm glad that you noticed that, because I always come back to my heart. My heart is my grounding. It's my life force. It's my everything. This is the beginning and end of everything for me. This is not hyperbole. I really believe it, and I feel it, and I do it unconsciously now. I don't do it consciously. I just naturally come to my heart to bring myself closer to me, to bring myself closer to love. And the exercise is that if ever you're floundering, or if ever you feel off center, and that could be like at the end of the day after a busy day, you know, you come to your sacred space. I really believe in having an altar or sacred space, like your Kuan Yin back there, and having a place where it's just yours to meditate. And you put your hands over your heart in the mid chest, and you focus on something you love. And it could be the great vast blue sky, or it could be the seagulls flying past, or it can be a child playing with a dog on the beach, whatever makes your heart open and relax. You just lightly focus on that and let your problems go for that moment, and focus on the warmth that builds in your chest as a result. Now, that is the short version of the heart opening meditation.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Judith. I'm speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff, and we're talking about empathy from the heart. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff, and we're talking about the genius of empathy, and that's the title of her book. When we're talking about caregiving, when we're caregivers, it takes some stamina. What are some of the techniques or things that we can think about as we're caregivers, and how we can protect ourselves in some way, or so that we continue to have energy to be empathetic?
That's exactly it. And the caregivers have to take care of themselves. And what I've experienced in my own life and what I've seen with my patients is if I'm in a caregiving position, I just stay there. I just want to stay there and be there and watch everything and take care of the person like a lioness, you know, and it's too much. You can't keep it up if it's a chronic thing, or you know, if there's a lot of pain, you can't keep it up, you have to take a break and go to the creek, walk by the creek, walk on the grass, just do something, get yourself out of the energy field of being with the one you're loving and caregiving for. And you have to let nature and the heart energy replenish you as you're going through this. The breaks are so important, and meditation is so important to be able to just close your eyes once again and come back to your center. Because what happens is that people give 200% and they give more energy reserves than they actually have.
Yeah.
And so it takes a toll after a while. And so in order to replenish, if you look at the caregiving process as a sacred, it's a holy act, it is when you're caregiving, you know, beloveds, or when I'm caregiving patients, as part of that sacred act, you have lessons there too for you. And that's being empathic with yourself and going back to the resources you know will build up your energy. And even if you're tired, even whatever, you have to do this. And sometimes it's rest. You know, to get as much rest, sleep is so nurturing and healing, and it repairs everything. Sleep does. So to go into your sleep in the dream time and allow yourself, for me, dreaming is very important, and it replenishes me in so many ways. And it gives me guidance about how to be with a person if I'm caregiving. And just know that when you're caregiving, you know, be very empathic with yourself. And it's sometimes you can get angry at the person, you know, and sometimes you could be mean to the person and you don't mean to be. It's just the stress level gets so high that you want to train yourself to leave at those points where you just get frustrated. I was talking to some friends about that. We're all, you know, dealing with somebody right now, different people. And, you know, just lovely women. And we behave in ways sometimes that aren't, you know, how we want to be. So you have to have empathy for that, for yourself. You have to learn to take breaks and replenish yourself. And if you can, to have some help, you know, and have other people sit there, or if you have to delegate
some. Yeah. You know, I'm reminded of, I was the caretaker of my mother and her dying. And I was pretty strict about, you know, her pills and her pain pills and things like that. And, you know, I put them in a special place. And her sisters came to visit us where she was in our home at the time. And mother was a binge alcoholic all of her life. And so, of course, she wasn't drinking at this time. But her sisters were there, and what she did was she discovered where those pain pills were, and she took more than what was, you know, designated that she should take, and she got really high. And I noticed that she had the best time and the best visit with her sisters. It was just a very magical moment. And there it was, you know, I thought I knew best for her, and I was kind of being like a nurse ratchet, you know, and that very firm nurse. And just letting it flow was what was called for in that moment. And it wasn't rational, but it was really heartful. And I'm so grateful for it.
Yes, yes. It's a beautiful mystery, the caregiving. And especially if someone is at the end of life, you know, where, you know, I personally feel they're entitled to do whatever they want as long as it doesn't hurt other people around them.
Yeah.
You know, but they're entitled, and they're entitled to die as they like too. If you're, you know, grandfather wants to die watching that football game, you know, God bless him. Let him watch it. Don't give him a hard time. I've seen my patients give him a hard time in the hospital because they think he should be dealing with his emotions. And no, that's not, that empathy is let it be, you know, be there and shine the light and show empathy, as we've been discussing, and know that that's a beautiful thing.
Right. You mentioned earlier something about people who have empathic deficit disorder, and there's a spectrum of them. But one of the ones that we most come in touch with, I think, in our lives are those who are narcissistic. And even, you know, what is your advice? Let's say it might be a family member that we can't, you know, disassociate ourselves with completely. Or it might be a work. It might be our boss or some coworker, and we have to cope with it. So help us and advise us in the context of empathy if we have to live with a narcissist.
Yes, well, you know, again, there's a spectrum of empathy. The lowest amount of the empathy deficient disorder people, the narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths. And then in the middle are everyday empathy, the beautiful empathy, and at the high end are the empaths. And it's a reality that we, in our world, we have narcissists everywhere now. So we have, you know, such a lesson, you know, in the world scene of what the effects of narcissism can do. But if you have somebody that you have to deal with, first of all, you have to learn how to diagnose a narcissist. And this isn't just for doctors or, you know, healthcare practitioners. You know, I go through, this is what you look for. They're always the same, you know, basically. So you look for the signs. Do they gaslight you? Do they love bomb you? And all of a sudden, all this love is around you and they're seducing you. Do they, you know, withdraw from you and become cold and withholding and punishing if you don't do what they say?
So are you saying, like, at first they love bomb you, everything's love, but then when you get looking for that in your life and you're used to that, and then suddenly they withdraw it, and it's a kind of control. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what people say. Well, what do they want? You know, what are they after? And it's simple. They're after power. They get off on power. And if they have power over you, no, it gets them happy. That's what does it for them. And it's so hard for empaths and sensitive people to get that, as they think, oh, if I'm only nicer, if I change this about myself, if I ignored him calling me stupid, you know, he didn't mean it or she didn't mean it, you know. So that's what empaths do. But I am very strict in this respect, you know, as you were strict with the other, you know. It's like, this is just how they are. And these are people with blatant narcissism. Sometimes, though, I want to say people have narcissistic traits. And you can sometimes work with that in therapy if they're self-absorbed. You know, if they don't know how to express their heart or their emotions, then I could work with that. But the other kind, the malignant narcissist, I can't work with in therapy, because they'll just blame the other person and say, it's her fault, it's his fault. They can't take responsibility. So it's a matter of all you sensitive people out there, or anyone, realizing the reality of what they are. Be able to diagnose them. Make a plan, you know, for how to deal with them. For instance, if you have a boss that's a narcissist, you have to lower your expectations and frame things in terms of how it will serve them. Otherwise, you'll never get any of your needs met. As unfair and tedious as that is, that if anything will work, I mean, get your needs met, that will. But if you keep going to your narcissistic boss with all your problems and expect them to be heartfelt people, you are just going to get hurt over and over and over again. So it's about being realistic, knowing who you're dealing with, diagnosing them properly. And really, it's easy to just, you go through the signs that I talk about and you'll be able to diagnose them and make a choice in your life. Because once you're involved with a narcissist, it's really hard to get out. know, I've worked with so many people who, you know, they've married the narcissist and they have children with the narcissist and they don't want to leave because the children are growing up. And in the meantime, their self-esteem is going, you know, it's crashing and they get depressed. So, you know, finally, after 20 years, you know, they limp out of it with their life.
Right.
They begin a new life.
Right.
But I'm not hyperbolizing here. This is truly what happens. So I really say, beware, all you loving, sensitive people, don't do this to yourself.
So you're saying that if trying to change the situation is just not working, just remove yourself from that. Even if you have to continue to live with them, remove your expectations of their changing and then work within that other framework.
Yes, exactly. And then at least you'll be more realistic. And then if you're at a family dinner, just don't sit next to them.
All right.
You can do really practical things. You don't want to sit next to them if you can, you know, decide where you want to sit. So you want to take care of yourself and you don't want to, you know, answer their questions. If they try and are very seductive, how are you doing? You have to realize that's just one of the symptoms of narcissism. Not that all seductive people are narcissists, but they tend to be.
So you just watch the way they want to bait you for, you know, getting into it or whatever it is, and just like remove yourself. I guess it's setting some boundaries for yourself.
And there's a technique I talk about, which is the gray rock technique. And what that is being a gray rock with them, to not showing your emotions, not getting upset, not crying, not, you know, getting involved with their dance, and just being like, if you've ever seen a gray rock, it's just very contained. And you see, they feed off of your intense emotions. It's called narcissistic supply. And when you don't give them that supply, they don't get fed. And so they might go on to somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here with Judith Orloff, Dr. Judith Orloff, and she's the author of The Genius of Empathy. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff, and we're talking about the superpower of empathy. And I need to ask you, can we have too much empathy?
The answer is yes.
Uh-oh.
Definitely. Where too much empathy is given to the wrong people, and they take advantage of it and then suck you dry. So you have to be very discerning. There's ways to have empathy with people who do horrific things or who hurt you. And it's having empathy for the suffering that caused them to commit these acts. It's never having empathy for the act itself. And so you're not having empathy for someone who betrayed you. You're having empathy for the childhood abuse that caused them to not be able to tolerate intimacy and do hurtful things. So, and the reason you want to have empathy with people who have harmed you or that you don't like is that it frees you. energetically, it cuts the cord. So you're not thinking about them all the time, like 20 years down the line,
right?
Not recounting the same story.
Right, exactly. In the subtitle of your book, part of it is the skills to heal your relationships and the world, how to acknowledge our differences. And you know, Judith, I'm reminded of an interview that I did recently with Christy Nelson, and she is the most energetic ambassador for grateful living and wrote a book called Wake Up Grateful. And she has this rule that, you know, we all know the golden rule, treat others as I would want to be treated. It's kind of the golden rule. And she said, no, she adheres to the grateful rule, which is do unto others as they would have you do unto them, because it becomes an exercise into the other person really caring for them and being curious about their needs rather than projecting my needs on them. And I think that you also adhere to that about when we work with people with difference, that we really get out of our projections of how it should be.
Yes, it's always, you know, part of empathy is to discover who a person is, if they're different than you, because studies have shown that it's easier to have empathy with people we perceive are the same or similar to us, that when people start having differences, you start getting into us versus them or stranger mentality, as opposed to welcome the stranger as yourself. You know, you see them as dangerous. And in a way, this is primal, but it's important to look at this in terms of empathy. And when someone is different from you, it doesn't mean you have to like them or dislike them, but you can explore, you know, what is really going on. And I can guarantee you, if they're human, we have all the commonalities of wanting to be seen, of wanting to be heard, of wanting to be appreciated. And I'm not necessarily including narcissists in there. It would have to be on a case-by-case basis. But in terms of just people who are different culturally, different in so many other ways, no, we're all the same, basically. We're all made of this human package. And we have differences in our upbringing and karma and all that. But you know, if you wanted to, you could probably connect with everybody. You know, and certainly the humankind as a whole, you can meditate and connect with everyone.
Well, I know that I have a I would call her a friend, and we are opposite poles politically, just absolutely opposite. But we've learned to respect one another. And I think that comes from I have to brag on myself because my being genuinely curious and deeply listening to her, and she feels that I see her. And yes, that's all it takes. I don't agree with her, and she knows that I don't agree with her, but she feels seen by me. And that's the power in what you're talking about, isn't it?
Sure is. It definitely is. That's when people are seen, they become less defensive and less combative and less playing with power and power games. When they feel seen, their little child inside is going, I never had this before. This feels good. You know, and you want to do that as much as possible. That doesn't mean to support things that are destructive. It doesn't mean any of that. And it doesn't mean that everybody who's been horribly hurt, you know, in personally or in a larger way, isn't entitled to every bit of grief and anger and holding on to what you've experienced as long as you need to. But what I'm saying is that when you're ready, it will help you and be healing for you to be able to have some sort of empathy and forgiveness so that you could be free.
Yes.
And you don't want to carry around all these things your whole life. But I just want to emphasize, you don't do it prematurely either. You know, if you're enraged at somebody, you have to give it time to work through. You can't just go to forgiveness.
So you don't bypass your feelings.
No. You are how you are as long as you need to be. But also know there's another step in the journey if you so choose to take it.
Right. And I'm also thinking as you're speaking, I'm reminded of just the gift that your time and attention is to another person. Just that in itself. And do you have any thoughts on that?
Time is the most precious thing to me of all things. The time I give and the quality of time that I share with people, nothing is more important than that for me. And so it's a precious gift to give of your energy, your eye contact, your humor, your connection, your joys, your sorrows, you know, to have all that. Like we're talking here, Justine, and we are on the same wavelength and we are connecting and I can feel the energy going back and forth. And it's a beautiful thing. So this is something we want to strive towards, and it's not beyond anyone. Even if you feel lost today, even if you feel misunderstood or hurt, you could begin at this very point of listening to our conversation to soften with yourself and begin the path of empathy. And I can't tell you how many times I've been on my knees and I think, I can't do this. And then I just go to sleep or I meditate. And then the next morning I start all over again.
Yes, I hear you. One other thing that I would love to cover before we end today, and this has to do with empathic leadership and how it is so needed in these times. And Judith, you know, you might say, oh, well, I'm not a leader, but we're all leaders of something. We might be leaders in our family or a leader in our book group or whatever. So say something about the need for empathic leadership.
Yeah, so certainly in the workplace, it's so needed to have a boss or a leader who can say, well, what do you feel about this? What is your creative input? I value that. I don't just ignore it. I don't just go the other direction. That is really incredible. Let me hear more. You know, you feel into other people and you make them feel important, as opposed to I'm the boss, do what I do or else, which is the old paradigm. And when you said everybody's a leader, we are. We have, you know, people are brought into leadership roles spontaneously in life, you know, and maybe, you know, it's happened to me a lot of times where over the years where I've been somewhere like at the gym and somebody collapses. And then what do you do in that case? So I go up to the person. I immediately send them energy when they're calling the paramedics. But, you know, you're put in positions where life will spontaneously call on you. So don't be afraid to express empathy in those situations.
So what I hear you say is like, pay attention, pay attention, be awake to what's going on around you. I mean, we kind of go with our to-do list and our tunnel vision that we're trudging along. I got to finish this grocery shopping or I got to do this or that or the other. So you're saying to open our focus up a bit and notice maybe the woman who has a child who's having a temper tantrum in an aisle in the grocery store, and maybe offering, your heart. And that's just a small example, and I'm sure you have others.
Or you offer your space in line, saying, would you like to go before me? I do that a lot. I love doing that. That's so much fun for me because it makes people happy. They love to go forward in a line. Nobody lets them go forward.
So I love it. I love it. That is so great. I love that idea. So let's be aware of all the little ways and the big ways that we can show our empathy towards others, and it helps us and it helps the world, doesn't it?
Yes.
Judith, I want to thank you so much for being with us today on New Dimensions.
You're very welcome. It was a joy, Justine, to be with you.
Thank you. I've been speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff, and she is the author of The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, drjudithorloff.com. And she abbreviates doctor, so it's Dr. Judith Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F, drjudithorloff.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3809.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.